Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the RA. My name is Amy Blewett, and I work on the Events and Lectures programme here at the RA. I'm delighted to introduce our first lunchtime lecture, which kicks off our Anselm Kiefer Events programme this autumn. Today, we welcome Dr. Christian Weikop, who will be exploring why representations of trees and forests feature so often in Anselm Kiefer's work. Christian is a Chancellor's Fellow in History of Art at the University of Edinburgh, and a specialist in modern and contemporary German art. He has published extensively in this field, including a catalogue essay for the current Anselm Kiefer exhibition here at the RA. Christian will also be chairing our event, Provocations in Art, Anselm Kiefer's Heroic Symbols, which takes place on Monday the 10th of November and includes exclusive entry to the Anselm Kiefer exhibition After Hours. So without further ado, please join me in welcoming Dr. Christian Weikop.
Thanks so much, Amy, and thank you all for coming today. It really is packed. It's very gratifying to see you all. And, you know, there are a number of fellow academics, former students, curators, as well as members of my own family here today. So I'm very, very pleased to see you all. And it's my third lecture at the RA. I gave a talk on the artist Lukas Cranach back in 2008, and before that on Georg Baslitz. So I'm very pleased to be back, this time talking about Anselm Kiefer. And I really ought to congratulate the curator, Kathleen Soriano, who I think has done an absolutely fantastic job with this exhibition. It's truly stunning. And I'm looking forward to going around and having a closer look myself later this afternoon. Last year, in October, then, I travelled out to visit the artist in his studio in Croisy on the outskirts of Paris. This studio is absolutely huge, sort of the size of two vast aircraft hangars. It's unbelievable. And, of course, it's not his only studio. He has one in Barjac in the south of France, too. In fact, studio is probably not the right word. It's a total work of art, the space. And he was extremely generous, very witty, very charismatic, highly intelligent, and spent a couple of hours with me. So I felt really very privileged. And the interview was really for me to get a better understanding of his work, particularly in relation to his representations of trees and forests in his art, which is something that has interested me for some time, and as I'm sure you've noticed, is very much a feature of his work. So it was in preparation for the essay, for the catalogue, this interview, and today's talk is closely based, actually, on that essay and the interview that took place, but I include many more images that I couldn't show in the catalogue itself. So in 1971, Kiefer established a studio, a wooden attic space, in Waldunhornbach, in the Odin Forest, of the Rhineland Palatinate. In an important painting of that year, Man in the Forest, he depicted himself wearing a nightshirt while standing in the middle of a dense coniferous wood, like some scene from the Brothers Grimm, from a story by the Brothers Grimm. The artist directly confronts the viewer and holds up a burning branch, as if to light our way through the forest, or perhaps to immolate it. The tall, bare, and bewilderingly numerous tree trunks are forbidding and give the impression of signposting tracks without end, a German Holzweg. I asked Kiefer whether his unusual attire was inspired by the German folk hero Michael, a German allegorical symbol equivalent to the British John Bull, as Michael is often represented wearing a nightgown and cap. In Fritz Erler's artwork for the first issue of the Munich Art Nouveau magazine Jugend, Michael is shown not wearing a nightgown this time, but holding a burning branch, just as Kiefer does. Anselm said that he found this figure rather too simple and simplistic, and that his decision to wear what he called a dress was steered more by the thoughts of the transgressive writer Jean Genet. It is not really clear whether we are being welcomed into the forest or whether a warning is being issued. And in the interview, Kiefer said to me, "I think I illuminate the forest in such a way that it could ignite, to bring the fire like Prometheus." I did wonder whether the strong sense of verticality in Kiefer's artworks with an arboreal subject had been influenced by other German visual examples that feature multiple bare tree trunks in various media. By just having a quick delve into the Weimar period alone, one can find paintings by Georg Brohl, photographs by Albert Ringer-Patsch, and stills from Fritz Lang's film Die Nibelungen, a film that Kiefer knows. All share this motif. There is also a colour woodcut from Edvard Munch entitled Towards the Forest, which brings to mind Kiefer, or vice versa. However, I would say that Munch's work is rather more optimistic, rare for Munch. Munch's couple here are seen from behind, the artist using the device of the Rückenfigur, borrowed from Caspar David Friedrich, to draw the spectator into the gloom of the impenetrable forest. Yet you can see the tops of the trees and the sky rendered through Munch's jigsaw woodcutting technique. In Kiefer's work, there is no foliage, no sky, no sense of any clearing through the forest. The viewer is entrapped by trunks. Kiefer's arborealism perhaps runs closer to the observations of the German surrealist artist Max Ernst, another painter of the impenetrable forest. In an essay published in the art journal Minotaur in 1934, Ernst said, "What is a forest? The marvellous exhilaration of breathing free in open space, yet the oppression of being imprisoned on all sides by hostile trees, outside and in at once, free and captive." One important source who was an acknowledged inspiration for Kiefer from the late 1960s onwards was the 19th century romantic artist Caspar David Friedrich. And the artist has said, "I like Friedrich very much indeed, and all the romantic poets such as Eichendorff. Some people think Friedrich is too romantic in a cliched sense, but I think this is not the case. He was a philosopher." In French Chasseur in the Forest, a painting charged with anti-Napoleonic patriotic symbolism, the French soldier, you can see here, is dwarfed by the giant fir trees, which, as Simon Sharma has pointed out, stand firm like a German battalion against him. Watched by a raven, he is standing at a crossroads with no apparent way through the forest. In 1976, Kiefer wrote a cryptic autobiography, a one-page list of names, words and phrases of personal significance. Six of the 68 items are explicitly on the wood as place or material: Black Forest, Lowland Forest, Odin Forest, wood, grain and becoming wood. The artist's connection to the arboreal is also suggested by his surname, which as a feminine noun can be translated from the German Die Kiefer into English as pine tree. He was born on the 8th of March 1945 in Donaueschingen in Baden-Württemberg in Germany, exactly 2 months before VE Day. Working back through the growth rings of his own history to the circumstances of his birth and early infancy, the artist has said, "I was born in the war. During the daytime, when I was a baby, my grandparents and my mother had to go into the woods to protect us from bombing. I had a little chariot and was taken into the woods in the morning, and then we returned in the evening." Given his later artistic compulsions to explore the mythic histories of the forest, it is, of course, tempting to believe that these dramatic early experiences might have left some kind of imprint. The multiple vertical tree trunks that are so striking in Man in the Forest reappear in other major works with an arboreal theme, such as this one. In his attic paintings, like Resurrexit, it is suggested that the forbidding stairs to the artist's studio in the top half of the image has been constructed or resurrected from the raw arboreal material of the represented forest in the lower half. The artist has indicated that the painting's two-part structure alludes to shamanic ritual and cosmology, namely sitting in the middle of the tree between heaven and earth. The sense of desolation in Resurrexit is heightened by the bare tree and serpent in the foreground path, an image suggestive of Eden after the expulsion of Adam and Eve, a humanless version then of the fall of man, a subject so beloved of Northern Renaissance printmakers. From 1971, Kiefer occasionally travelled some 300 kilometres from his studio in Hornbach to attend the Kunstakademie in Düsseldorf, where young artists would congregate around the charismatic figure of Joseph Beuys. Of this time, he has said, "I was never in Beuys's class and he was never my teacher, but he was a great inspiration. I was working in the forest and would roll up these huge paintings and put them on top of my Volkswagen Beetle and drive to Düsseldorf to show him. Significantly, one of Beuys's own actions took place in the Grafenberger Wald outside of Düsseldorf in December 1971. Incensed by a proposal to clear part of the woods to make way for a country club tennis court, he decided to stage a theatrical demonstration. Beuys led a diverse group who, apart from their contemporary fashion outfits and cheery dispositions, give the collective impression of being young tribal guardians of the German forest. Beuys is rather more convincing than the others in assuming the role of the wild man of the woods, a latter-day Hermann, clasping his birch staff while looking, or is it a broom handle, I'm not sure, while looking directly at the viewer with a wide-eyed expression. Only one member of the group, Kiefer, watches him closely and stands almost shoulder to shoulder with his mentor while grasping his own broom with near combative intent. 10 years later, in another gesture of eco-romanticism, Beuys began a project at the Castel Documenta to plant 7,000 oaks. Beuys and Kiefer shared an interest in nature printing, in German Naturselbstdrucker, as well as 18th century xylotechs. The xylotechs took the shape of books where you could find details from the tree inside and arranged as a library. Each book describes a certain tree species and is made out of the actual wood, the covers. The spine is covered by the bark, where mosses and lichens from the same tree are arranged. You can see Kiefer's unique books often contain seeds and plants, and in some ways relate to this Enlightenment tradition. Here is Fougenay. Here. The iconography of a tree or a plant sprouting from a supine human form has a long tradition in art and mythology. The artist has stated, "This is an old idea starting from the Middle Ages. A man lies down and a tree emerges from his navel like an umbilical cord." The image can be related to numerous representations of the Jesse tree found in illuminated manuscripts, churches and cathedrals, all inspired by the book of Isaiah. "And there shall come forth a rod out of the stem of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of his roots." Photographs taken in 1969 are the source of many other works by the artist with an arboreal or celestial theme, such as Man Lying with Branch, which you see here. You see how that's based on the photograph from his Karlsruhe studio. Spinning off this iconography, there is a woodcut by Munch called Blossom of Pain, which depicts a flow of blood running from the heart of the artist's naked body into the earth, where it nourishes a beautiful lily, an idea of creation through suffering. Only the artist's upper body is visible, and his lower half is below the soil, as if he too has grown up out of the ground. The organic vitalism of this motif is effectively registered in the woodcut. On seeing this woodcut for the first time during my interview, Kiefer recognized the connection to his own work and spontaneously recited a line from a song by Schubert entitled Adelaide: "On my grave will bloom a flower from the ashes of my heart." In paintings and very large woodcuts of 1995 to 96, such as the woodcut Untitled in the collection of the Metropolitan Museum of Art, or the painting The Orders of the Night in the Seattle Art Museum, which is in this exhibition at the RA, Kiefer returned to the theme of plant forms emerging from or growing close to a recumbent body. And in these artworks, a forest of giant sunflowers loom over him. In many ways, they are symbolic markers of Kiefer's Barjac period in the south of France, but they are reminiscent not of the familiar, vibrant yellow sunflowers of Van Gogh, but the dark, brooding sunflowers of Egon Schiele's melancholic canvas, Autumn Sun. Kiefer has stated, "These sunflowers are black like the firmament." Kiefer relates the vertical dispersal of sunflower seeds to a cosmos of stars, a circular motion from the microcosmic to the macrocosmic. While I think Kiefer is an artist in the Romantic tradition, perhaps I'm moving too far in that direction. Kiefer's trees and forests are manifestly not those of his 19th century Romantic predecessors, such as Adrian Ludwig Richter, who in their folktale illustrations often presented the forest as a nurturing, geistiger Heimat, a spiritual home. This is something you can see if you look at Richter's Genevieve in Forest Seclusion here, the painting, and this in this wood graving, Heimliche Liebe, also by Richter. Kiefer's not a fan of Richter, I should say. Perhaps Kiefer's trees are more suggestive of the dramatic romanticism of Carl Wilhelm Kolbe, whose fantastical oak you can see here. Although Kiefer's work is more elemental, fire and forest, fire and earth are captured in his early canvases, such as Painting of the Scorched Earth, which represents a transparent artist's palette entwined in the tortured, burnt-out, barbed wire-like branches of a foreground tree. In other artworks that show the Buchen landscape, Kiefer has used the term Ausbrennen in his inscriptions, a term which can be translated as cauterization, as well as to burn out. Cauterization is the medical process by which damaged tissue is burned to facilitate healing, and Kiefer's book could be seen as alluding to both the destructive and restorative properties of fire. It is also worth observing that in 1945, Hitler ordered a nationwide scorched earth policy in what became known as the Nero Decree to prevent the use of German supplies and infrastructure by advancing Allied forces. The wounded landscape, and by extension a tragically scarred Germany, though self-inflicted scars, is the subject of Kiefer's early watercolours, such as the poetic yet almost unbearably stark Winter Landscape, a painting that gives new meaning to the troublesome expression Blut und Boden, blood and soil. In Winter Landscape, blood flows from a severed head suspended in the dark sky down onto the snow-blanketed field below. The title alone brings to mind Caspar David Friedrich's two related and iconic winter landscape paintings from 1811, one of which you can see here. Kiefer has suggested other sources, though, such as Franz Schubert's 1848 song cycle Winterreise, Winter Journey, where the protagonist wanders isolated among trees and snowy fields. In addition to Caspar David Friedrich, as a young man, Kiefer became familiar with the work of a more contemporary German artist, namely Georg Baselitz. And in this idea of a wounded arboreal landscape first surfaced, in fact, in the mid-1960s in the work of Baselitz. A key work of this period is The Tree, which depicts a bare anthropomorphic specimen with severed bleeding branches. It is suggestive of atrocity in the forest and undermines the patriotic arborealism of Northern Renaissance romantic artists such as Albrecht Altdorfer and Friedrich. Rural violence can also be seen in Baselitz's fracture paintings and woodcuts of mice and foresters, where his dismemberment of a familiar subject powerfully alludes to the dismemberment of the entire nation by the National Socialists, and later the division of Germany during the Cold War. These works were seen in the Baselitz retrospective here at the Royal Academy a few years ago. Baselitz's next major pictorial device would now become his signature method of inverting imagery, with Forest on Its Head of 1969 being the first painting to employ this technique. The inverted tree trunk is suggestive of some disturbance in the iconic locale of German Romanticism, or worse, that the world, and particularly Germany, has been turned upside down by terrible historical forces. Some of Baselitz's fracture paintings have been seen by Kiefer in the important exhibition 14 mal 14, which ran from 1968 to 73 at the Staatliche Kunsthalle Baden-Baden, organized by Klaus Gallwitz, the curator later responsible for the provocative West German pavilion of the Venice Biennale in 1980. Baselitz's work appeared in the first of these 14 mal 14 exhibitions, and Kiefer's featured in the last. Baselitz bought Kiefer's paintings from this group show, and his ownership is indicated in the 1973 catalogue for Nibelungenlied and Holzraum. After the exhibition, Baselitz visited Kiefer at his attic studio in Hornbach, and the two artists became friends. It's an intriguing coincidence that a few years earlier, in 1971, the same year that Kiefer moved to an old schoolhouse in the Odenwald, where he set up a studio, less than 100 miles away, Baselitz moved to Forst an der Weinstraße, Forst being a German word for forest, and also used an old village school as his studio space. In Kiefer, Baselitz clearly identified a fellow artist who shared a drive to explore and in many ways deconstruct the iconic locale of German Romanticism. I interviewed Baselitz for the RA earlier this year, and I asked him what drew him to Kiefer at this exhibition. He said, "This was the first time that Kiefer's paintings had been exhibited, and I was completely fascinated. This enthusiasm continues to this day. It has not faded, but increased." Kiefer trained in Karlsruhe and then became a mentee of Beuys. Beuys is an artist to whom I felt considerable distance, rather than any close connection. But that is not the case with Kiefer. He is a truly genuine artist with an incredible soul. And his paintings, these early paintings, leave such an impression because of their physical presence. I had never seen such paintings before. And Kiefer commented on the generosity of Baslitz in acquiring works from this exhibition. In fact, he said, Baslitz bought the show, pretty much. A key attic painting from the early 1970s is Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost that you see in the middle here. A theme that Kiefer has returned to repeatedly. And it has a similar two-part format to Resurrect It and takes us into the studio space from the forest below. Here the idea of resurrection is conveyed by the ghostly presence of three chairs that have ignited as if taking fire from man in the forest. A flaming trinity that is connected to the three foreground trees by the inscriptions Vater, Sohn und Heiliger Geist. In the related painting, Quaternity, these inscriptions are joined by a fourth name, Satan, represented by the snake, relating Kiefer's historical interest in the theological doctrine that Satan was once part of the Godhead, a view considered so heretical that one could be burned at the stake for suggesting it. In addition to biblical subject matter, Kiefer also explored Norse mythology and the composer Richard Wagner's take on these time-honored tales. In Notung, Kiefer responds to Wagner's second opera in the cycle, The Valkyrie, and the moment when Wotan thrusts his sword into a great ash tree, which has been substituted here by Kiefer's attic interior, wood filling the entire image. Written above the wooden joist is the legend, Ein Schwert verhieß mir der Vater, my father promised me a sword, a line uttered by Siegmund in need of a weapon to fight the husband of his sister Sieglinde. My father promised me a sword is also the title of a watercolour that Kiefer made in 1975, where the sword is transferred from the ash tree to the apex of a tall cliff overlooking a Norwegian fjord. He visited the Norwegian fjords that year. Kiefer's reuse of motifs for various artworks, sometimes across different media, is clearly characteristic of his oeuvre, and over time these motifs and themes have been reworked and transformed. A good example of this reutilization and transformation in his art is a photo painting, Yggdrasil, which draws on one of the photographs of the book for Genet that Kiefer had taken a decade or so earlier. It is also related to a striking drawing, Odin Yggdrasil, which is in the exhibition, depicting the animals and mythical creatures of the Odenwald where Kiefer lived. In the photo painting, Kiefer becomes the trunk of the ash tree bearing branches in an interesting form of body art. The circular bands at the bottom of his dress echo the tree rings of time that he has rendered in white acrylic. You can see here. Yggdrasil, the world tree of Norse mythology, is the giant ash that links and shelters all worlds under whose branches the fates, known as the Norns, spin threads of destiny. It grows between Asgard, the realm of the gods, Midgard, the realm of humanity, and Hel, the realm of the dead. Odin can be found in Asgard at the top of the tree. While Kiefer becomes the trunk of Yggdrasil for his photo painting, in a related photograph, which we have already seen, he lies on the floor of his messy studio in the same crochet dress with a branch sprouting from his abdomen. In addition to Norse mythology, Kiefer also has a great interest in the writings of the Roman historian Tacitus and his foundation mythic history of the Battle of the Teutoburg Forest in 9 AD, where the German tribes led by Arminius, later renamed Hermann by Martin Luther, defeated the Roman legions under the leadership of Varus. And you can see the names of Varus and Hermann named in this work. The painting can also be referred back, in fact, to the young Goethe's influential On German Architecture of 1772, an essay that Kiefer knows well. In this work, Goethe eulogized about the Gothic character of Strasbourg Cathedral rising like a sublimely towering, wide-spreading tree, with its thousands of branches, millions of twigs, and leaves more numerous than the sands of the sea. Goethe's line certainly had a deep impact on August von Kreiling, who's Erwin von Steinbach in Waldersdorm of 1849 depicts the architect of the Strasbourg Munster contemplating Gothic form under the natural vault of trees. As in the work of Friedrich, here trees again serve as iconic symbols of German pride and patriotic feeling, a patriotism that culminated in the second half of the 19th century, shortly after unification, with the completion of Ernst von Bandel's Hermann Monument, which you see here. This is an etching of 1909 showing that monument. There is a sense of forest as memorial site in Kiefer's Varus and other works. During my interview, I showed Kiefer this Friedrich, the Tombs of the Fallen in the Fight for Independence of 1812. It was a work that he could not recall, but was immediately taken by. I also mentioned other paintings by Adolf Menzel and Max Liebermann, which depict memorial services held in a beech clearing in the Thuringer Forest near Kursen, where foliage forms a kind of natural vault. He was certainly keen on Friedrich. He didn't know this particular Liebermann, but was nonetheless, he could see some connection there, this idea of the forest as memorial. Varus constitutes a visual bridge between Kiefer's attic paintings and his later woodcut collages. Compositionally, the painting bears some comparison to Resurrexit, although in Varus, the satanic snake has been replaced by white tendrils that link the names Hermann, Thusnelda, and Varus to the romantic writers in the upper branches of the tree on the right side of the composition. These are the romantic literary interpreters of Tacitus, namely Heinrich von Kleist, Christian Graber, and Friedrich Klopstock. Intriguingly, the tree inscriptions in Kiefer's work recalls a painting by Friedrich's colleague Georg Kersting titled The Wreath Maker. Can't quite see these inscriptions, but they are there on the branch of Kersting's canvas, where the names of anti-Napoleonic fighters are engraved on the trunks of oak trees, a memorial work that can be compared with the aforementioned graves of the fallen freedom fighters. And all are inspired by Kleist's play, The Battle of Hermann of 1808. It should also be observed that Kiefer's play was much celebrated later on by the National Socialists. As Kiefer knows only too well, Romanticism was not the only movement that developed a forest fascination. In the 1930s, the Nazis became obsessed with the idea of the rooted, forest-dwelling German as distinct from what they saw as the homeless, desert-roaming Jews. The uniqueness of the Waldgefühl, the feeling for the forest, of the German people was repeatedly stressed in national doctrine, National Socialist doctrine, publications, visual art and films such as Ewiger Wald, Eternal Forest. From his earliest work, the 1969 photographs of his occupation's performance, Kiefer understood how the National Socialists attempted to claim trees and forests as their own. A spread of 18 black and white photographs documenting this performance, carefully arranged by Kiefer, was published in the art journal Interfunktionen in 1975. The first photograph showed Kiefer giving a Zikal salute, carefully framed by the pollarded branches of a plane tree. This took place, by the way, in Montpellier in the south of France. An architectural wreath, a window ornament of the monumental staircase on which he stands, is photographed in such a way as to give the illusion of it hanging naturally from the lower prune branch. Kiefer emulated the dramatic cinematographic techniques developed by Leni Riefenstahl, and there is certainly something Olympian about this image. In this regard, it is worth remembering that the champions of the 1936 Olympics in Berlin were each presented with an oak wreath and oak sapling, and some of these so-called Hitler trees are still in existence. They can still be found. Kiefer took other photographs that were not used in the Interfunktionen photo spread, but were used in his earlier book projects, in which, as a solitary figure, as you can see here, he salutes in the middle of tree-lined promenades that are stand-ins for Albert Speer's parade grounds. In these photographs, the sculptural prune trees with their distorted club branches seem to echo the artist's gesture, almost as if he was commanding nature to obey. Kiefer's parodying of the pomposity of Hitler, and it is parodying, although we'll discuss that a little bit more in November when we have a session on heroic symbols, Kiefer's parroting of the pomposity of Hitler by using arboreal frames of reference can be usefully compared to a 1933 photo montage by one-time Dadaist John Hartfield, who mocked the Nazi tree cult by representing a miniature Hitler with a watering can and hydrating an oak tree from which sprout acorns of soldiers' helmets, gas masks, and missiles. When I showed this work to Kiefer, he was delighted. He said that Hartfield was truly wonderful, but he did maintain that he wasn't thinking of Hartfield at the time of occupations. He did say to me that, you know, people today, particularly young people, see photographs of Hitler and they think of him as a clown. And he said it's hard for us to understand how this figure, so often ridiculed, in fact, in culture, had such a command on the German population. But anyway, Kiefer is certainly interested in Hartfield. Bearing in mind Kiefer's attempts to address the National Socialist past provides us with another way of seeing Varus. In the forest path of the painting, blood drops, like bullet hole impressions, feature across the central axis. The reference to blood relates this work back to his Winter Landscape and Ice and Blood of 1971, but also to Baselitz's anthropomorphic Bleeding Tree. The image is highly intertextual. On one level, it functions as a commentary on the Battle of Hermann. On the other, it is commemorative of those shot down by German forces whilst on the run in the forests of Germany, Poland, and Russia during World War II. Or, of course, of those trapped in concentration camps surrounded by forest, such as Buchenwald. The sense of arboreal interment is even more emphatic in the artist's book that Kiefer created a year or so after Varus, his Teutoburger Wald. The front cover of this book has a black and white photograph taken by the artist at the edge of the forest, which presents a screen of white birches barring the entrance and the exit. This photograph brings to mind another by Eugen Heilig, who joined the German Communist Party in 1922. In 1936, Heilig, a member of the resistance, took a shocking and revealing photograph of an anti-Semitic sign placed at the edge of the Mittenwalde near Berlin, which read, "Jews are not welcome in our German forests." Quite extraordinary. Another point of comparison here might be the work of the socialist writer and artist Bruno Apitz, a prisoner of the concentration camp Buchenwald, who towards the end of the war carved a powerful, expressive image, as you can see here, of an agonized face out of the blackened remains of a tree stump, no ordinary tree, but the legendary Goethe oak, under which Goethe reputedly wrote the Walpurgisnacht scene in Faust. The romanticism of young Goethe, who compared Gothic cathedrals to forest canopies and whose tree had been spared by the Nazis in the process of clearing 370 acres for their concentration camp, only for it to be burnt down in Allied bombing raids in August 1944, was given a much darker aspect by this harrowing sculpture. It is a powerful visual metaphor for the predicament of the Buchenwald prisoners, a number of whom had been hanged on the branches of that very oak. Kiefer's interest in wood stumps and trunks continued in the mid-1970s, and these works are suggestive of a metaphor used repeatedly during the Kaiserreich and then during National Socialism. This idea was that a forest of different trees encapsulates the togetherness of all German lineages. Kiefer's work seems conscious of this ethnocentric appreciation of the arboreal, and he critiques it. This is particularly evident in a number of paintings he produced between 1976 and 1977 that focus on the individual stamm, or trunk, a good example being Tree with Panzer Tank, which you can see here, of 1977. In his handmade book from 1974, entitled Das Deutsche Volksgesicht, Face of the German People, Cold for 2,000 Years, which was later shown in the Venice Biennale, Kiefer used the woodcut, his first attempt in the medium, in a manner that critically responds to the physiognomic photographs of the National Socialist photographer Erna Lenvay Dirksen. In various volumes in the 1930s and 40s, she had articulated how the facial and bodily character of peasant types from different regions in Germany stood in accordance with the character of the landscape. Kiefer appropriated these photographs and merged her archetypal faces of Aryan peasants with the grain using an experimental woodcut technique that also brings to mind the frottage work here of Max Ernst. In Face of the German People, Cold for 2,000 Years, the faces appear to have either become woody or charcoal-like, a process of lignification, or they have sunk back into the arboreal material, rather reminiscent of the Danish Tollenmann melded into a peat bog. Kiefer's print impressions can also be related to woodcut head portraits of native types by expressionist artists, in particular Max Pechstein's prints of hardy East Prussian fishermen and Kirchner's woodcuts of Swiss mountain peasants. These expressionist artists in the circle of the Brücke maintained an organic understanding of their art, with Emil Nolder even stating that he wanted his work to grow forth out of the material, just as in nature the plants grow forth out of the earth. Expressionist artists, and especially Ernst Ludwig Kirchner, had placed a great deal of emphasis on the importance of the handcrafted print and uniqueness of each individual impression. As somebody who's made woodcuts in his time, this is a point that my brother Matthew also well appreciates. The term Eigendruck and Handdruck often appears on Brücke prints as a statement of authenticity. Kiefer also makes his own woodcuts, but they are not additioned and are often treated as one material among many others incorporated into a larger collage work. In this respect, Kiefer arguably has more in common with a Dadaist, such as Raoul Hausmann, in terms of how he recontextualizes woodcuts, although Kiefer works on a much larger scale. The woodcuts used for his book, Die Hermannschlacht, that you see here, or the Battle of Hermann, were later redeployed for his most impressive works of the late 1970s, the huge intertextual and multimedia composite woodcuts produced between 1978 and 1980, titled Ways of Worldly Wisdom, Hermann's Battle, and one of those is in the Royal Academy exhibition. Photographs of the production of these composite woodcuts reveal Kiefer's non-precious attitude with regards to the condition of his prints, with many of them just strewn across the floor of his studio. The fact that so many versions of Ways of Worldly Wisdom exist, with woodblocks being frequently reutilized and the resulting prints being combined with other artistic materials, subverts, in a way, the veneration reserved by the expressionist artists and critics for the medium specificity of the original handcrafted print. Similar to Face of the German Folk, the portraits that appear in Kiefer's Ways of Worldly Wisdom were appropriated from a National Socialist book. However, in this case, Kiefer appropriated a publication by Karl Richard Ganser rather than one by Len Weidirksen. Ganser's book, entitled Face of the German Leader, 200 Portraits of German Fighters and Pioneers Across 2,000 Years, traced German lineage through a compendium of portraits representing military, cultural, and political figures from Arminius to Hitler. In Ways of Worldly Wisdom, Kiefer unifies these diverse countenances by rendering them in the rough-cut style of expressionist printmaking. The over-painted black spirals that formally bind the heroic heads to the charred tree trunks, suggestive of the burnt-out Goethe oak that we saw earlier on, might refer to tree growth rings, spiders' webs, forest tracks, or equally the splintered lines could be perceived as barbed wire. Combined with the flaming pyre at the centre, the image conveys both Wagnerian myth and Holocaust abomination. The various portraits of German heroes are bound by their patriotic idealism, which Kiefer implies culminated in the genocide committed in the name of the fatherland. These large-scale works give the impression of encapsulating German collective and cultural memory, where the forest becomes simultaneously a site of racial unity and societal collapse. The artist has said, "I think in vertical terms, and fascism was one of those levels, but I see all the layers. In my paintings, I tell stories in order to show what lies behind history. I make a hole and I pass through." In many respects, Kiefer is like a dendrochronologist working back through the age rings of time on his tree sections, exploring the mythic place of the forest in the cultural ecologies of the past. Ways of Worldly Wisdom relate to other works of this period that focus on Brunhilde's horse Grana in various large woodcuts he created from 1977 onward that were carved on large planks. The German word for wood grain is Getreide, but in English the name of Brunhilde's horse is a helpful homophone, Grana, grain. Appropriate because these works really stress the grain, the age rings, and fibrous irregularities of timber, all of which underscored Grana's charred skeletal frame in the work on the left. The woodcuts by Kiefer thereby constitute a form of arboreal expressionism that goes back to Munch and the Brücke, reminding us how these artists attempted to connect more directly with the forests, a mythic German past, by shifting the matrix of cultural nationalism from the forest as symbol to the wood as artistic material. In 1980, the work of Baslitz and Kiefer was shown together in the German pavilion of the Venice Biennale in a highly controversial display. Baslitz's model for a sculpture formed the centrepiece of the German pavilion. Like some horror version of Pinocchio, this carved Hitler-like figure seemed to emerge organically from the roughly hacked mass of a wooden block, its stiffly raised right arm suggestive of the Nazi Sieg Heil salute. Surrounding this sculpture and in the flanking rooms were many of the emphatically Teutonic works by Kiefer. The wood, both as subject and material, dominated the pavilion, which stood out as a kind of arboreal tabernacle. One year later, in 1981, the work of Baslitz and Kiefer would appear in the Royal Academy's New Spirit of Painting exhibition, and they both received positive coverage, both in the accompanying catalogue and reviews. Certainly more positive than in Germany, where the artists were viewed by many art critics as ideologically and aesthetically reactionary as a result of these Biennale submissions. This proved to be a critical interpretation, and I'll be talking about why this was a misunderstanding of Kiefer's work in that panel on heroic symbols in November. In the 1980s, as he turned to a wider range of subjects, not least Jewish identity, Kiefer stepped out of the mythic German forest for a while. Nevertheless, he could not let go of the subject altogether, albeit in a non-German context, turning his studio set into a makeshift forest as he play-acted the part of the ancient Babylonian hero Gilgamesh, who, according to legend, entered the cedar forest with Enkidu in search of immortality at the Tree of Life. In the manipulated photographs within the book, the artifice of the location is not consciously disguised. Shellac effectively simulates bark on some pages, bringing to mind those 18th century xylotexts that we saw earlier. More recently, in Winterwald, 9th of 2010, Kiefer again represents a standing grove of tree trunks, but the materials he utilized for these later forest artworks are far more diverse than anything in his paintings of the 1970s. Winterwald employs oil, emulsion, shellac, ash, thorn bushes, synthetic teeth, and snakeskin on canvas in a move from depiction to greater material expression. I have to say just quickly, wandering around Kiefer's studio in Kwazi was quite extraordinary because I would just come across boxes of synthetic teeth and thorn bushes and snake skins and other material he uses for his work. It was an amazing experience. Very, very bizarre. Surreal, one can say. The presence of snake skin is enough to recall that earlier work, Resurrexit, but the inclusion of synthetic teeth gives the work a much darker dimension. A related mixed-media forest painting entitled Trinity, which of course you can also relate back to Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost, includes ferns and other material. Ferns, a vascular plant that Kiefer has used in various artworks, have been described by the artist in the following terms. The first trees were ferns. They were primal. Charcoal and oil are made out of ferns that existed at the beginning of life. There are many stories about plants having memories. If this is true, ferns could tell us a great deal about our beginnings. Like forests, ferns may contain secret knowledge. And here is just quite simply an example of that snake skin in Winterwald, a close-up detail, in comparison to his earlier painterly representations of the snake in Resurrexit and Quaternity. Kiefer's complex work embraces so many things simultaneously, deconstructing German history and responding to art history, including, I think, perhaps, Walter Leistikow. His huge woodcuts of 2013 refer to the cultural history of the German woodcut that includes expressionism, but also goes back to Albrecht Dürer. And in these works, you can see the polyhedron forms that he appropriated from Dürer's famous engraving, Melancholia, floating like an impenetrable soap bubble across the mythic Rhine, through the riparian forest where he lived as a boy. Kiefer has said, "This border to another country, France, was strangely mobile. because in the spring, with the snow melt, the river swelled enormously, overflowed its banks, and spread out so that the basement of our house was filled with water from the River Rhine. Where now was the boundary? There is also a fluid sense of time here, as the polyhedron symbol that Kiefer has referred to in various artworks since the 1980s, while originally relating to an engraving on copper, serves to remind us of the centrality of Dürer in the history of the woodcut, and connects Kiefer with a line of great German artists who expressed themselves in this medium going back to the Northern Renaissance. However, it would be oversimplistic to see Kiefer's recent Rhine series, and you can see those works in the last room of the exhibition, extraordinary works, in the recent Rhine series of woodcuts solely in terms of paying homage to the past masters of German printmaking. His complex work conflates multiple points of reference, and multiple interpretations are therefore possible. Prominent German artists always seem to eventually find their way into the symbolic forest, or at least focus on individual trees. Jörg Immendorf's giant sculpture, Elbquelle, of 1999, which stands near the centre of Riesa in Saxony, alludes to Caspar David Friedrich's paintings of bare winter oaks. And recently, Markus Lupertz has created works that in some ways are a response to Kiefer, I think, such as Birch Grove, which appears to relate to Kiefer's ominous Iron Path of 1986 that cuts through the countryside. And Gerhard Richter, too, with his famous Couple in the Forest, his abstract squeegee paintings entitled Wald, and his artist book of photographs, also entitled Wald, of 2008, which you can see here. And from the New Leipzig School, David Schnell, who has been referred to by some critics as Kiefer's inheritor for his paintings of timber constructions and optically disorientating forest groves. Such playing with forest perspectives is not exclusive to German artists, though, as I'm sure you'll know. As we have seen, our own David Hockney creates some extraordinary paintings for this for his Royal Academy exhibition a few years ago. But it is Kiefer who remains the artist who has most often reinvented arboreal motifs in his diverse work. He has significantly contributed to the changing but persistent visual narrative of the Wald in the German art canon. His glass and steel vitrine installations of plaster-coated willow or orange trees, such as In the Beginning or Roots of the Jesse Tree, both of 2010, a version of which can be seen here in his studio, a photograph I took last year, attest to the variety of ways that he has imaginatively given new growth to old wood. It is often an art of elemental transformation and flux, symbolized by the artist's own comments on the final opera of Wagner's Ring Cycle, The Twilight of the Gods, when Brunhilde demands a funeral pyre to be built for Siegfried by the side of the Rhine. Kiefer has said, "The wood of Siegfried's pyre is torched and burned." Brunhilde goes with Grana into the fire, and the water of the Rhine goes over the fire. Brunhilde is transformed into ash, and the ash is dissolved into the Rhine. Thank you.
We're now going to take some questions, if anyone has any.
I would like to ask what the reaction was of the German government or the the artistic critics of the time of those 1970 pieces involving Hitler and the Second World War. I also would like to know, why does he work in France now? Was that a was there a special reason? And thirdly, does he have an army of assistants that helps him? How does he actually physically produce the work?
Okay. First question, yes, there was a very negative reaction to the work in Germany, critically. And in fact, a famous critic and curator, Werner Spies, referred to the show as being an overdose of the Teutonic. But actually, Spies has now become a great supporter of Kiefer. And when Kiefer collected the Peace Prize in 2008, Spies delivered the address. There was a negative reaction because the Germans, very sensitive to this history, of course, you know, in a sense, they were overwhelmed, I think, by these images of the past coming back at them. They didn't quite understand what Kiefer and Baselitz were up to, perhaps, in deconstructing German history. And it was actually in America and in the UK where there was a very favourable reception of these artists. And when kefir started to be collected, particularly by Jewish collectors in the 1980s in the States and New York, there was a rethink. And so now, if you go to a German museum like the Hamburger Bahnhof in Berlin, you'll see the main concourse is dominated by Kiefer's work. But, you know, Kiefer didn't forget that reaction. Why is he in France? Did he leave Germany in disgust, in the sense is what you're asking? I'm not sure. I mean, Kiefer is bilingual, and of course he lived right on the border with France. So he was always curious about France when he was growing up on the other side of the Rhine. As a little boy. So he's attracted to French culture in any case. Whether he felt so disgusted by the critical reaction within Germany that he felt he wanted a change of scenery, I don't know for sure, but certainly he's always moved around and explored other areas. And now he's settled in Paris rather than Barjac. And your third question was?
How does he work?
Yes. He does. I mean, he still does a lot of the painting himself, right? So he sees himself as a painter, and he has an extraordinary studio. But he has a number of helpers. I won't say an army of helpers. A number of helpers who go around his studio, which is vast, on bikes. They cycle around the studio. And so for these huge installations, these vitrines and such like, of course, that's not a one-man show. That demands some collective effort. But he directs everything very closely.
Are there any more questions? There's one at the back.
Thank you for a really interesting lecture. I just wanted to ask, evidently Anselm Kiefer is very agile with his use of words, and his works are often linked with poetry, but specifically the way he refers to different meanings of words, or what one might call a pun. For instance, Stamm, meaning tribe or trunk, or the grain idea that you pointed out. I just wondered, has he said anything personally about the meaning of his name, his surname, Kiefer?
I think that was discussed in the mid-1980s. Very briefly, in interview. Kiefer was not interviewed at all, really, in the 1970s and 1980s. And so there was one interview that took place then in the mid-80s, I remember. And it was almost a unique event. So when I was asked, I felt very, very privileged indeed to go and interview him. I mean, he said that sometimes he spells words incorrectly, and then people later point out the punning potential of the word. So another example is Rhine. He spells Rhine R-E-I-N, R-E-I-N, which means purity. And so some critics said to him, "Ah, were you deliberately punning there?" He said no, but some things come to him like that. So yes, but the use of inscription, of course, is very interesting in his work. And I think a lot of the puns are accidental. He said certainly, because I asked him about grana, he thought it was hilarious when I said grain. He said, "Oh, you don't pronounce it grain. You pronounce it grana." I said, "I know, but in English you could read that as grain, and these are extremely grainy works." And he said, "Oh, that's very interesting. I hadn't thought about that before," which rather surprised me.
You mentioned briefly the connection Goethe made between architecture and forest, and it struck me in the exhibition that Kiefer's treatment of old Nazi architecture, which I haven't really discussed, but I'll bring it up anyway, that he seems to make that connection with his large number of columns in particular. It gives a feeling of being in a forest, and the way he's treated them in a sort of decayed way makes it seem even more in terms of returning to nature. Do you know if Kiefer made any such connection between Nazi architecture and the forest?
No, I mean, he wasn't necessarily thinking of a connection between Nazi architecture and forest as such. I mean, he was saying to me that he knew the Goethe essay very well on German architecture. I mean, it's true. He does show motifs of architectural constructions by Wilhelm Kreis and Albert Speer in those Rhine woodcuts in particular, interspersed in the forest. But these are kind of imaginative relocations of these structures to the forest, in a sense, to stress maybe the Germanness of the work. It's a good question. The process of relocation, it is imaginative. Yes, whether he makes a connection between the forest and National Socialism is a more complex subject, but one we can discuss at length, I'm sure.
The other natural image that keeps coming up in Kiefer's work are the sunflowers. So do you have any thoughts about sunflowers and trees, the differences and similarities between them, and has Kiefer said anything about that?
Yes. I talked to him about these huge-scale paintings like Orders of the Night from Seattle, where you see these giant sunflowers. And he said that in Barjac, he grew sunflowers to the extraordinary height of 7 meters. I said, that's unbelievable. He said, no, there's a special variety coming from Japan, believe it or not. He said they do everything better in Japan, better wine, better croissants, better sunflowers, he said to me. So the sunflowers are towering in the sense they provide an alternative to the forest. They tower over his recumbent body. But his images of sunflowers are also inspired by his readings of the philosopher Robert Flood, who relates the dispersal of sunflower seeds to the cosmos, the microcosmic to the macrocosmic. So that was interesting. But yes, of course, there's a connection to Van Gogh, quite clearly. And Van Gogh was also named one of the 68 items in Kiefer's cryptic autobiography. Van Gogh is named. So yes, he's conscious of those references. He also knew the work by Egon Schiele, Autumn Sun, which provides a much more melancholic view of the sunflower, the dead sunflower, effectively.
Thank you. That concludes our lunchtime lecture today. Thank you all for coming. More events can be found on our website for the Kiefer exhibition. And finally, please join me in thanking Christian for a fascinating lecture.
Thank you. Thank you very much.